Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today, drum roll please, and I am pleased to welcome back Dave Allen. And welcome back, Dave.
Hey, nice to be back. Happy hump day.
Oh, I did miss that.
I'll bet you did.
Yeah, I did. But today we're going to bring our listeners our opinions and our commentaries on today's economic and political events. It's Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen. It's September 25th, 2019, and we have Wendy Wilson joining us this afternoon. And first I'm going to do the market report. It's kind of weird getting back to the way it was. I was kind of jiggling and juggling here and there, and so bear with us. It's been a hectic day here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading, and of course with the pullback in gold today, yeah, there's people taking advantage of this. So we had a nice little pullback today, $27.1505. Silver was down 71 cents at $17.97. Now that one I would have liked to have seen a hold 18. Platinum was down big, almost 3%, down 28 at 929. Palladium was down 35 at 1642. The USDX today was up 0.55. It's hitting 99 right on the nose. So, yeah, you have that big drop in gold today. And I can still remember Larry Kudlow. Oh, when is he going to get out of there? Crude oil was down 77 cents at 56.52. Stock markets today, they were roaring. They don't care what the news says. They don't care about politics. They know they got their buddy in there, so they're going to shrug off any news, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Dow was up 162 points at 26,970. It doesn't matter that we're going to be pumping $500 billion into the banks here until October 10th. That doesn't matter. The NASDAQ was up 83 points at 8,077. The S&P was up 18 at 2,984. Maybe that's why they really want to legalize marijuana, so everybody can just go out there, puff a little bit, and be happy. You know, they don't have to worry about anything. 10-year yield, 1.73%. And let's see, futures contract for gold. Are we still in December? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was 1511, so that held nicely. And let's see, what else do we have going on here? European Asian markets, they were down. Hong Kong was down a little over 1.25%. And you know, it's just business as usual, ladies and gentlemen. The one thing that's been getting hit, I noticed, was Bitcoin. I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago, it was up 11,000. Now we're at 83. So that's what they do, ladies and gentlemen. They reel the people in, then they sell, and y'all get stuck. Those who buy cryptocurrencies get stuck holding the bag, but that's okay. Because a lot of people never sell. They never sell their paper trades, and that's what you need to do. That's what it's all about. It's about trading. 800-375-4188. Gold and silver should be the only item that you have in your portfolio that's truly a long-term investment. We have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Visit our website at thepowerherbs.com. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hi, Wendy.
Been a while.
Welcome back. It has been indeed. Thank you.
I thought we'd talk about why patients are declining free cancer screenings. Who would turn down a free screening, right?
I would.
Well, yeah. Well, apparently this is a report out of King's College in the UK, and they're saying that under their free government-run healthcare, the National Health Service, that more patients are declining the invitation for their free cancer screening. And most Americans would understand not getting screened if maybe they had to pay for the test. But in countries like the UK, this is the government healthcare system. They've already paid for the tests with their 20% garnishment out of their paycheck to cover this so-called free healthcare. So why are they, you know, saying thanks but no thanks to the cancer screening? Well, yeah, researchers are kind of dumbfounded by this. According to the report by England's King's College and Queen Mary University, the researchers were surprised by the findings, which indicated 35% of female patients will accept the invitation for the cancer screening. But the findings did get published in the September 2019 Journal of Medical Screening. So in the UK, females usually around their 50s, 60s are getting pushed or targeted to go ahead and get their cancer screening done. And by the time a female is 65 in Britain, she is expected to have already completed 5 to 6 cancer screenings. And they would be screenings like the cervical cancer screening. She needs to get at least one of those. Breast cancer screening, they want them every 3 years. And then bowel cancer screening every 2 years. But something is not kosher here, you know? So the UK, the British people, guess what? They've gotten a little skittish about getting free treatments because, especially in the dental area, okay? The British people have to contend now with their government-run healthcare system claiming they are committing health insurance fraud when they're eligible for the treatment. So it's kind of become a problem, such a problem that they've developed and opened what is called the National Audit Office. And it's been established to investigate the penalty notices and the fines associated with those notices that have been sent out to 1.7 million British citizens. So the physicians, especially dentists, are reporting that there's a lot of fear of being wrongly accused of insurance fraud. And it's really deterring patients from having treatment. And can you blame them? Seriously, you know? British citizens are already taxed the 20%. But now if they get an audit letter and a fine, it's automatically $150. It would be the equivalent to U.S. dollars. But what's more disturbing is the system seems to be targeting, get this, according to the audit office, they're targeting the British poor that are under the healthcare, as well as those who have disabilities or those who have family members with dementia. Kind of sounds like an algorithm to me. What do you think?
Possibly. Yep.
Well, the patient appointments for the poor, according to the report, have fallen off to a mere 25% of all treatments given in the country. So poor British citizens would rather deal with their health matters themselves than be falsely accused by the government and harassed by the debt collectors. Here's some quotes. This is by the British Dental Association. They say there are some people who are wrongly accused of fraudulently claiming free treatment. And then Meg Miller, she's with the public account committee there. She says this is not a system that is working as it should. The National Health Service must take urgent steps if it's to avoid causing unnecessary distress to patients who are tripped up by an overly complex system and who end up facing large penalty charges. So why is it complex and why is it tripping up patients if it's free healthcare and they're already paying for it? Well, Charlotte Waite, she's with the British Dental Association. She says England has this system built on the presumption of guilt. It offers few warnings and has left vulnerable patients harassed by debt collection agencies. What is worse is the patients are intimidated into paying the fines rather than to contest them. So here is proof of that. Here's a quote from a citizen called Tricia Costello. She's a UK citizen. She says, "We were being accused of fraud, and when we called the number on the letter and explained the clerical error, they at the National Health Service just said, 'No, no, you owe this money. Get out your credit card and pay it.' She said they really scared us, and we felt threatened by our government." End of quote. Wow. Well, here's the thing. In the UK, during 2018, the National Health Service filed 250 million of these fraud accusation letters and collected over $41 million. Of the original filing, 53 million were mistakes and later got corrected and resolved. So the government-run healthcare is kind of riddled with some serious problems, a lot of corruption, fraud, and even bribery, according to reports, in the billions of dollars. So why are the women saying no? Well, if we get back to that question, why are they turning down the free cancer screening? Well, the researchers found that a majority of the women who refused were the poor women. And you can see why. Maybe somebody who feels the screening's not necessary, they want to avoid being accused of defrauding the government system and then bullied into paying the test they can't afford anyway. You see where we're going here?
Absolutely.
So this is a system that has been exploited from the get-go, and this should be an example for all Americans when they want free government-run healthcare. So England has been exploited since its inception with this healthcare system, and it's now teetering on bankruptcy. Some citizens would get physicians to write them prescriptions for things like toilet paper, toothpaste, toothbrushes, birth control, even foodstuffs, because it fell under that broad definition of healthcare. And the stores were obligated to take the prescriptions and give the patients these items and then try to bill the government for it. So vague, ambiguous wording created all these loopholes in the healthcare law and has led them to this type of exploitation. Here is a quote from Brendan Brown. He's with the National Health Service Business Service Authority over there. He says, rules about entitlement to treatments could be complicated to understand, and we recognize that genuine mistakes and confusion happen. We acknowledge that understanding eligibility can be more difficult for vulnerable people, and we are invested into an effort to create extra support. End of quote. I don't know. It sounds bizarre, but this is something we should learn, and this is really important because what is happening in the UK with their healthcare could happen here, should educate us on what not to do. So the government in Britain has essentially an open checkbook garnishing worker pay, and they have this medical treatment fraud collection agency set up to essentially defraud the patients on just an accusation. So the poorly written legislation on the healthcare has created these loopholes for a minority to exploit the system, which is making it a bankruptcy question. And this is really a good example not to put all your eggs in one basket. So if we look at the population, though, Melanie, of the UK, it's 66 million people, and the population of the US is 327 million. So imagine a one-payer healthcare system in the United States run like that of the UK. It would be five times worse in the United States because government doesn't know how to run anything. They know how to tax and spend. So here, I'm going to give you a little snapshot. If it were to roll across the pond onto the United States shore, this is what it would be like. We would have extremely long waits for appointments.
That's already happening, though.
But you don't get to pick the appointment with government-run care. They make it for you. Either show up or you don't. If you're getting a referral for specialists, the wait over in the UK we hear is a year. So it'd be longer here because we have more people. And then if for some reason you can't make that appointment that was set a year out, you have to start over. You don't get to stay at the front of the line. You have to go to the back of the line. So also, treatments would be not be less expensive because of the pay garnishment. It covers the rising costs. Also, fraud would be worse than the Medicare and Medicaid physician scams here. And the disproportion of care costs for the elderly compared to the lack of new births would eventually collapse the system. But euthanasia would be implemented just as a stop measure to avoid that collapse, because they're actually talking about revamping euthanasia laws as we speak. So,
you know what's sad is I remember it was in the news, the two little babies who were ill, mm-hmm. terminally ill,
uh-huh.
and government kept had control mm-hmm. over the treatment of those children,
right?
And the parents could not take their children, could not bring them to the United States for care.
No.
And, you know, they were willing to pay for it.
Yep.
They were willing to, you know, there wasn't any expense to the government, but yet government kept those babies.
Well, that's exactly what the government health care is. It makes you a prisoner to it.
Yep.
That's what it does. I mean, it's a third of a nation's wealth. So that's a lot of cha-ching. You know, so that's why they want that power and control, is because it will dictate who gets treatment, who lives, who dies, and so forth.
Yep.
So you talk about, you know, population control just, you know, through healthcare.
I mean, to some degree, it's already happening under our insurance companies, you know, with these HMOs and PPOs. They've long term have, you know,
Well, we did
okayed
a show
and denied, you know, various coverages and so forth. And if you couldn't pump up, if you couldn't step up to the pump with the cash, your history.
Well, these HMOs and PPOs, that started under the Nixon administration. Okay,
yep.
So actually, one world, one payer, government-run healthcare was conceived then. Mm-hmm. And this has been, you know, stepping stones in that direction, see? So it's been like, you know, a frog in the pot. We slowly turn the heat up. You don't notice it so much. You swim around, you're a happy little camper. But eventually it comes down to you're under a government-controlled care plan and you don't get to say anything, you know?
Instead of addressing the real problems of why the cost of healthcare is so expensive.
Well, that's just it, you know. I was just reporting on the poor people. What was it, over in Poland? Yeah, over in Poland. They were not given full informed information on 330, I think it was 330 medications because the government redacted the price. So they don't know how much it is. You know? It's government-run care. They're just not going to tell you how much the drug is. So how are you supposed to know, you know, if you can, you know, even if afford it? Because, you know, what it, why even redact it if it's a government-run care system and the citizens have already paid for it? You know, it, somebody pays for it some way, somehow, somewhere. Why are they redacting the price of drugs?
Someone told me they get their they're in some sort of medication here in the States, and she was telling me that I can't remember how she got in the discussion with her pharmacist, but she wanted to know what the cost was if she paid cash, because I don't know if she'd forgotten her medical card or something like that. And for her to pay cash, I can't remember which way. One way was actually less expensive, and they don't tell you about the less expensive way.
Yeah.
You know, they want, you know, so they're going to steer you towards, you know, whether your healthcare carrier is going to pay more. Mm-hmm. But it would cost you less out of pocket.
They
don't tell you that.
It does depend what state you're in, you know, what hospital authority you're dealing with and so forth and so on. But in most cases, paying cash out of pocket is cheaper. Like I think a gallbladder surgery run you $93,000, something like that. In some states, you know, like Alaska, Hawaii, whatever. Some other states, it may be $56,000 for the same surgery. But if you pay cash, it's a very affordable. It's $14,000.
Wow.
for the same surgery. So you see the middleman involvement here.
Wow.
With insurance, don't you? But I like.
And if
God's
you go
plan.
To India, it'll cost you $1,500.
Right. Well, I like God's plan. He says herbs, spices, medicinal herbs keep you healthy and well, and that's what I do.
Give us your contact info, Wendy.
Sure, 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com. Take care now.
All right,
bye.
Appreciate it. Great reporting, Wendy. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom. My co-host is Dave Allen. 800-375-4188. It's 800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can listen to these programs. They are archived on a daily and weekly basis. And we are always getting new listeners to the program. And I just want to say welcome to the program. And I hope you enjoy our program as much as we enjoy doing it. Right, Dave?
Absolutely. And if you ever have a question about anything we talk about or if a topic you'd like us to cover, please don't hesitate to drop us an email. What is that? DiscountGoldAndSilver@yahoo.com, Melody?
Correct. Absolutely correct. DiscountGoldAndSilver@yahoo.com. Well, we talked about how the stocks rose today, and of course, the Treasury yields rose, and of course, this is, again, what, the 20th time or so that the U.S.-China trade deal could arrive sooner than expected. So here we are again. And, you know, President Trump told reporters at the UN in New York that a trade deal could come sooner than you think. And, of course, this has been going on for over a year. And we've had this back and forth between China. And but we also saw a rebound in the markets after a rough transcript of the infamous telephone conversation now with President Zelensky of Ukraine that was released earlier today. I was able to read bits and pieces of it, but I really haven't had a chance to think about what was in it and so forth. But what else say you, Dave?
Well, you know, that call is believed to be part of an intelligence community whistleblower complaint that Democrats in Washington have asked the administration to release. They say that complaint holds details that aren't available in the call's transcripts that were published today. Now, the market may have taken some comfort in the fact that the memo doesn't appear to show an explicit quid pro quo by our president. But more details from the whistleblower's report have yet to come out. You know, as Melody reported, gold also slid today. I believe that percentage slide was about 2%, retreating from a multi-week peak, again, as political uncertainties in the U.S. drove investors to the safety of the dollar, limiting bullion's appeal for the time being. You can be rest assured that the price will be rebounding and back on track to, you know, its new era. Gold hit its highest since September 5th yesterday, as a matter of fact, $1,535. Again, most traders believe that gold will continue to be supported because everywhere you look, you see nothing but new worries, all of which support gold prices. You know, that's about it, Melody, on that end.
You know, well, we always report what the mortgage apps were and week by week. And They fell about 10% last week. This is according to the Mortgage Bankers Association, and blaming it on higher interest rates, I guess, over the last couple of weeks. And so volume was still higher than what it was a year ago, but we're certainly beginning to see a weakening in week-to-week applications. And the average contract interest rate for the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was $484,000, and it increased slightly from 4.02% from 01 from last week, Dave.
Yeah, mortgage apps to purchase a home fell 3% for the week, but were still 9% higher than a year ago. Buyer demand has reportedly been stronger than expected as the fall begins, especially at the entry level, where are primary headwinds to a very strong fall market. The recent data on increased existing home sales and new residential construction points to the underlying strength in the purchase market this fall, as anticipated by the housing market.
You know, and I think this is one of the most important stories I think that's going on right now. And it certainly is shadowed by, all the hoopla and distractions that are going on everywhere else.
Yeah.
And this is the repos. We talk about it. I started reading about it last Monday. We started talking about it on Wednesday, and it needs to be discussed on a daily basis. And you guys might say, oh, no, not again. But yeah, I mean, this is important. And even if they get this under control and it goes away and everything goes back to normal, this is a sure sign of where the problems lie. And the big problems aren't going to go away. Not when you're putting in almost $500 billion in a 15-day, time frame. So, yeah, I mean, this key borrowing cost for Wall Street, continues elevated today, even as the Fed continues to inject these billions of dollars in these longer-term cash into the U.S. banking system. And this cash through 14-day loans to primary dealers was seen as a much-needed boost for banks and, of course, Wall Street to avoid facing another cash crunch. So the $30 billion worth 14-day loans from the Fed was less than half of what these primary dealers had bid for at a term repurchase agreement yesterday. So
it's these repo operations do fall below the public radar, except when there's a liquidity problem or crisis, as it turns out, although it is a very integral part of the day-to-day operations of banks and the feds. These primary dealers, they're the top 24 Wall Street firms that do business directly with the Fed, borrow from the Fed by using their treasuries and other bonds as collateral. We're writing about more about this in our blog that'll be out on Friday. As Melody noted, this 14-day funding bolstered the daily cash injection of up to $75 billion through overnight repos that the Fed put in place a week ago. The Fed apparently is going to hold two more 14-day term operations worth at least $30 billion each, both tomorrow and again on Friday. Overnight borrowing cost in the $2+ trillion repo market has been running at about 2% since Monday, well below a peak of 10% reached last Tuesday. That's a level not seen since the height of the global financial crisis in 2008. Now, analysts generally blame the shortage of bank reserves as the culprit for last week's market turbulence, which is kind of hard to believe given, the fact that, the Fed auditing process shows, unprecedented healthy levels. I guess it is what it is. But apparently, the seasonal fluctuations with the federal tax payments, along with some other factors, are being blamed for that. Now, analysts still said that demand for funding will likely remain elevated going into the end of the quarter, which is next week, when repo lending tends to decline as banks want to conserve cash in their balance sheets to meet their reporting requirements.
Well, they can call it normal and they can pick out reasons and so forth why this is happening. But I think this is a big deal, and I think it's a little more than that. And like I said, they might be able to get it under control. What's interesting, though, right now, Dave, you have President Trump. He's participating in a news conference. That in itself isn't that unusual. But he has Pompeo and Mnuchin standing next to him. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know what he's talking about. I'll have to follow the headlines here to see if there's any maybe there's an announcement that there was a trade deal with China to have Pompeo or Mnuchin next to him, or maybe it has something to do with Iran. You know, speaking of Iran, I mentioned it this morning on a program that I was on. Yesterday, Chris Wallace interviewed the Iranian Rouhani. I don't know. Is he the is he quote unquote the president of Iran? I don't know the leader.
Yes.
And it was an interesting interview. Now, whether you believe anything that the Iranians might say, but it was interesting because the questions were directed as far as the bombing in Saudi Arabia and the oil fields or tankers or whatever you want to call them, the storage facilities. And he pretty much, he did say he pointed to Iran, and everybody is pointing to a particular word that was on there. And he broke it down into the Shiites and the and I can't remember which one he said, but he says they use that term. He says, and he kind of explained it, why that particular verbiage or word or signature or whatever was on, whatever they found to where they were blaming Iran for being behind the situation in Saudi Arabia and the bombings. And so it really was an interesting interview. And Dave, have you seen anyone replay that interview?
No, but I am seeing that on my own news streaming that this press conference could indeed be about Trump's call with President Zelensky of Ukraine. Not sure if it's the same thing, but that's getting a lot of play right now on my news feed.
Don't know why he would have Mnuchin there, considering he's a Treasury Secretary, and he himself got into a little bit of trouble last week when he didn't take the Chinese delegate was supposed to go to, I believe, Montana, or was it Montana or Wyoming, one of the farm areas up in there, and he canceled it. President Trump was a little upset by that. So we know Mnuchin's a little bit of a hot water with doing that. But so we'll follow that, ladies and gentlemen, to see if anything pops up on that.
But he's going to get his company credit card taken away from him
maybe,
for a while.
Maybe. But I still think it's interesting that no one has rebroadcast that interview with Rouhani. And I don't know. People might not believe anything that he might say, but one thing that we do know is usually when they lie, everybody always tells a little bit of truth. They mix a little bit of truth in with whatever they lie. So, but it really was, from what I saw, an interesting interview. So, and you can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
So see if you can't find it, and maybe we'll post it in our newsletter this week, a link to it. So that y'all could watch it. So make sure you sign up for the newsletter at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Well, the EU, Boris Johnson is in a little bit of a tiff with his government. And but the European Union is looking to slap some tariffs on more than $4 billion of U.S. exports in a retaliation against our trade policies. The plan reportedly hasn't been approved, and at least one EU member is opposed to the idea. But nonetheless, the discussion came again after they were threatened to President Trump threatened to slap tariffs on much of $7 billion worth of EU imports due to allegedly illegal EU aid for European plane maker Airbus. So, well, you know what? If Boeing wouldn't make planes that crashed, maybe they get a few more orders. But so again, this is a bit going on too. You know, if somebody sneezes wrong or doesn't, you know, everybody threatens everyone with tariffs. And then they all back out.
Yeah, it seems to be everybody's go-to policy now. You know, you get your ticked off or want to send a signal to another country, well, threaten to slap on a tariff. You know, in April, the U.S. published a wide list of European products that, you know, would select in an attempt to recoup $11 billion that Washington believes, you know, is owed to the U.S. The European Commission earlier this year launched a public consultation on its preliminary list of products from the U.S. that it would seek to hit with import tariffs. The list covers about $20 billion worth of U.S. exports to the EU, including items largely aircraft, chemicals, along with some food products. So it's ugly out there.
Well, I'm going to make you think on this one. I mentioned quotas the other day. Wouldn't have quotas, having tariffs in addition to quotas been a more powerful influence on the multinational corporations to perhaps bring more manufacturing back to the States?
Oh, sure. I believe so. Certainly, they're both are, I mean, I'm not going to say effective tools, because I believe generally neither are or neither is. But, you know, used together, I think that's you raise a very interesting point. That, I mean, certainly, you know, you have the free traders up in arms, but, you know, in terms of effectuating the kinds of policies that you know, you're trying to get to, that could be a very effective way. Now, I'll look after the program, see if we can find some research out there that maybe quantifies that a little bit that we can talk about on Friday.
Because I was just thinking, I mean, to bring them back, putting on tariffs, I mean, if the products are so cheap overseas anyway, and you can move them to, you know, South Korea, you can move them to the Philippines, you can move them wherever, people are still going to, it's not going to encourage anybody to bring manufacturing back here.
Right.
But if you put quotas on them, hey, you bring them back to the States, you have no quotas. You know, you make it here, no quotas, no tariffs. So, anyway, just a little bit of common sense coming from a girl. And we're heading into a break right now. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. And, you know, a little bit out of the news, we're just going to touch on this briefly. We're not going to go into too many details, but I guess little old BB did get nominated, but he has to try to form the next government. And that was announced today. And, of course, this is offering the longtime leader, you know, some sort of a political lifeline, even as he faces an indictment for corruption. And it just amazes me, Dave. You know, you have all these indictments for corruption, and it just, I mean, he almost didn't make it, but.
Well, another close election, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, he has 28 days to assemble a majority of at least 61 seats in his parliament and has no clear path to that number. The parties that have endorsed his bid for the term won 55 seats. So he gets kicked out of office, and, of course, he's going to have to face those indictments.
Yeah, could get ugly there the next couple of weeks.
You know, and sometimes you wonder, what if all of this is going on, how much of that? Because, you know, he made some pretty strong statements about, you know, for him to get reelected and so forth. And these guys will do anything to get reelected.
But. Yeah, power. Power is a corrupting influence.
Yeah, absolutely. 86% of Americans say financial education should be mandatory.
Yeah, there you go.
How about that? Somebody's thinking, Dave. A whopping 86% of Americans believe that financial education classes should be mandatory for every student before they graduate high school. This was a study was conducted by research firm Lipsos in partnership with Country Financial, and they did uncover some pretty interesting statistics. 53% of both parents of college-age children, Americans, say they never received any type of financial education in either K-12 or college. Only 15% of Americans say they feel very prepared to manage their finances once they left college. 61% of respondents regard their parents as a significant influencer in shaping the way they manage their finances. So there you go, parents.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Apparently, you know, parents admit that they lack confidence in their own financial literacy, with almost 50% giving their level of financial proficiency a grade of C or lower. So, I mean, I'm not sure that that many are prefacing their advice to their children with, well, I'm not feeling too confident about this, son. But in any event, parents are the number one go-to source for advice. 32% go to their parents, followed by a partner or spouse. That's 16%. A financial advisor at 12%. School classes 8%. But in general, it's showing parents still lack confidence in planning for retirement, as well as, you know, how to pay off student loans, managing their 401ks, or confidence they feel is necessary to invest in, you know, the stock, bond, and precious metal markets. According to Sallie Mae's 2019 report, 70% of college grads, anyway, say they've learned their financial skills from their parents. So parents, get on the ball there. If you're not feeling confident, go back to school mm-hmm. or talk to your school board and make sure that they try and do a better job for the next generation.
But you know what? If they taught them about real money,
well, there you go.
That's the issue. They're not going to teach them about real money because then they can't continue the facade that they have placed on the American people.
You look
what
at
real money is.
At the textbooks that that are being used today. I'm sure, you know, virtually none, you know, have what we'll call alternative or non-mainstream perspectives on money, and that certainly I think is as important a factor as the fact that so many Americans feel that you know, financial education should be mandatory. So, you know, what is taught is just as important. And perhaps more so, particularly if, you know, they're teaching the wrong things.
Well, since today's your first day back in a couple of weeks, we are going to allow you, or I'm going to allow you, but we've been waiting. Nobody's going to allow you to do anything, but we've been waiting for Brevity is Golden. And we're going to have a little bit of, I don't know if this is levity or if this is interest. It is interesting. Who needs warships?
Levity is golden.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it's a sort of a bizarre story. It's about walruses, of all things, ladies and gentlemen. Researchers aboard a Russian Navy vessel learned the hard way last week that a mother walrus is a force to be reckoned with. The Russian Geological Society reported that a walrus attacked and sank a landing vessel as it was approaching the shore of a remote Arctic island. Now, these landing vessels, I saw a picture of the one that was sunk, and it's not small. I mean, you know, it's not a warship per se, but, you know, I wish I had gotten the dimensions, but it certainly wasn't tiny. During the landing at Cape Heller, a group of researchers had to flee from a female walrus who was protecting its cubs. That was the Navy that said that in a statement. Fortunately, the incident's only casualty was the boat. Everyone on board managed to reach shore safely. I'm not sure how they got there. Hopefully they didn't have to swim too far in frigid Arctic waters. The society said the incident highlighted just another risk in a region fraught with many dangers, including wild animals, storms, icebergs, and frigid temperatures. Now, that was said in the context of the new exploration that's going on up there for, you know, oil, natural gas, and God knows what other type of security things are going on up there. But a team taking part in a joint mission with the Russian Geographical Society to retrace the steps of an 1874 expedition to survey Franz Josef Land. That was an archipelago in the Arctic Ocean that's now controlled by Russia. Now, just a quick point, walruses are no modest creatures, Melody. It's a large marine mammal found in the North Pole in the Arctic Ocean and subarctic areas of the Northern Hemisphere in both the Pacific and Atlantic. The adult walruses are characterized by prominent tusks and whiskers and their considerable bulk. Adult females can weigh more than 2,200 pounds. Males almost double that. Now, interestingly, and this is why we could be particularly as, you know, there's more and more exploration in the Arctic over the coming years. We could see more of these types of encounters. Walruses, turns out, live mostly in shallow waters above the continental shelf, spending significant amounts of their lives on sea ice looking for smaller sea creatures to eat. So, just a little interesting aside to, you know, spend a day full of otherwise frustrating, crazy news. That melody is Today's Brevity is Golden.
It's always fascinating, these creatures that we have that no one really talks about or pays attention to. They're not cute and cuddly, but they are big, 4,400 pounds for those males.
Gosh.
But, yeah, sinking a ship. But anyway, this is interesting. You know, the United States has threatened to leave the body, the Universal Postal Union. Now, this is Postal Service, International Postal Services. And so we've threatened to leave the body after October 17th if members don't change the system of fees that Postal Services charge for collection and delivery of mail and small parcels. A particular concern to President Trump's administration is the sliding scale of fees that allows China, which is the world's second largest economy, to take advantage of lower rates that are available to developing countries. As a result, it remains cheaper for manufacturers in countries like China and Cambodia to send a small package to the United States than it is for American businesses to ship them from Los Angeles to New York. How I agree with that.
Yeah.
I know what shipping costs.
Boy, yeah, well, you sure do. I mean, this is certainly something that I've actually never before read about. Just, you know, very tangentially aware of a process, but you know, that again is so important to international commerce and communication. Certainly, I'm sure a lot less so than in many respects than 10, 20 years ago. But, I mean, you think now in terms of just the increase in, you know, how individuals and other companies use e-commerce platforms like Amazon and eBay, you know, this could certainly be an issue, apparently, if the U.S. If the U.S. pulls out. But, you know, Peter Navarro, who's a U.S. trade advisor, this is only the third time, by the way, that this postal union has met in 150 years. So this could explain why there are issues with their sliding scales and fees that they meet so infrequently. But the fact that, you know, the growth, the explosive growth in China alone, which is now the biggest player in the $30 trillion e-commerce market, that's 30% share. I mean, you can see why the U.S. and I got to believe, you know, most of the other 150 nations that are part of this union are up in arms and want to see some changes. But
you know what is interesting, Dave?
What?
Even though, I mean, if we do lose hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and if we lose tens of thousands of jobs a year, and the factories and the growth associated with that, Navarro said, my question is, what would happen? Bashar Hussein, the Universal Postal Union's Director General, made very clear he believed that if we pulled out, the withdrawal would mean total destruction of existing services to the United States. The U.S. would be excluded from services and would be unable to use existing international mail processing codes. Its withdrawal would represent a nightmare scenario for other countries, which would not be able to exchange mail with the U.S. Postal Services. For consumers, he said that the U.S. withdrawal would spell big increases in postal charges.
Yeah, we'd probably have to negotiate with each country that parcels go to.
But in the meantime, services would stop, wouldn't they?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know how that system works, but presumably, you know, if we're no longer a member, I mean, I gotta believe. I mean, that would be so disruptive to commerce that I can't. First of all, I can't believe that we'd actually leave, but again, you know, if we would, even if it's just as a negotiating tactic. I can't see how it wouldn't be.
I often wondered who ran the International Postage Service. I didn't know if it was part of the U.S. Postal Services. I really didn't know that there was a separate entity. Yeah.
Union. Yeah, it is interesting.
I had no idea. But, you know, it's very difficult for people here in the United States to ship anything overseas. I mean, it's hard for me. I can't even ship things to Canada.
How so?
Well, the regulations.
Oh, yeah. Not cost. You're talking about just shipping.
Well, it is cost, but then you can't get there anyway. Yeah. There's so much regulation on what on shipping and everything. It makes it very difficult, and the cost.
How you package and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So, very interesting. And we're just about out of time. I just want to bring to the listeners quickly. You know, we all know Boris Johnson is having a time as prime minister, but he's going to have to. His time is running out. He just has a little over a month in order to solve the Brexit situation. And I don't know if there was anything else. Something along with all this impeachment talk and so forth, that might put a little bit of a damper for Pelosi to sign the administration's landmark trade agreement with Mexico and Canada, the UMFCA. So I don't know. President Trump says he doesn't know if there'll be enough time if she's wasting her time on a manufactured crisis.
Yeah, will she even be willing to bring it to the House floor?
Well, we're out of time, Dave. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. And we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe. Good night and God bless.
Bye-bye.